then once you have the virtue, once you've developed the facility of performing those good actions well, it becomes a habit. And here Father Ascari points out what Brother Francis used to say all the time. Whenever he would list the 10 categories of Aristotle, he would always leave habit as habitus, because it doesn't quite mean the same in English anymore.
Yeah.
But it's an ability that's an inner strength that is, it becomes part of your character. It's accidental, but it's deeply rooted.
Okay, so the habit that we talk about as a virtue is a quality. So it's that one of Aristotle's
10 categories.
10 categories. Habitus, the last one, is like our habits. It's something worn outside of us, something that's sort of on you but not in you. A habit is a habit in the, you know, so that's why Brother kept it in Latin. Habitus is something that's put on the substance.
Oh, I see. So Father Ascari leaving it in Latin here isn't the same.
He's not quite
the same
he's
point.
Not quite doing
well.
Oh,
okay.
He's actually kind of following Pieper. Pieper a lot of times will leave something in Latin just because he knows
that the
secular, or he knows that the vulgar translation of it is kind of all often packed with a different set of meanings. Like temperantia, he keeps it in temperantia in his book because he thinks that the German, and I guess the same thing can be said about the English language notion of temperance, it doesn't have
limits
the right...
Limits it to drink.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like the famous stupid women's temperance movement in this country, right? It was all about keeping their men from getting drunk. It had little to do with actual temperance, which is a perfection of the soul. It's a quality of the soul, which you know, St. Thomas says...
Forms character.
Yes,
then becomes something part of it.
Their concept of temperance was, you know, illegalizing alcohol. Well, that doesn't make virtue as the entire mafia scene of the age of prohibition proves
to us. The
gilded
age.
Yeah, we know very well that virtue doesn't come from that kind of ridiculous prohibition. A virtue is a quality of the soul. And it can be a natural virtue or a supernatural virtue, but it's a quality of the soul. And again, Pieper says it's a perfected ability to do something. We have the abilities in us to do those acts, but when you have that ability perfected, then you have the virtue.
By repeated acts of
that. Yeah. So St. Thomas calls virtue someplace in his works a stable quality of soul. The concept of a virtue is it's a stable quality of soul. If you isolatedly do something brave, or do something temperate, or do something prudent, or do something, what am I leaving out? Just, the most important one, really. If you do acts that are proper to those virtues, but isolated acts, that does not the virtue make, right?
It's an isolated act of virtue. It is not virtuous man.
Yeah, it's not a virtue. The act is the act, but the virtue perfects the man. So the virtue perfects the individual. And it's a stable quality of soul. So that means that you'll be stable in performing those kinds of acts. So this, by the way, of course, in the world of business, people aren't thinking in these terms. You know, you've got a high divorce rate. You've got, people who cheat on their wives. You've got, you know what I'm saying? In the business world, in the cutthroat world of American business or international business.
Okay. It's not a moral atmosphere.
There's not a focus on morality. He doesn't quite say it, but he's deliberately tying morals to the virtues of good leadership in business. Mm. For instance, justice. Right. I mean, if a man thinks, you know, if he thinks that he can, you know, divorce his wife and marry some other woman, or cheat on his wife or something like that. Well, not only is he failing in the virtue of temperance, which is a big deal, he's failing in the virtue of justice. We often overlook this. Pieper points this out in his book on the Four Cardinal Virtues, that these sins aren't just sins against the sixth and ninth commandments. They're grave injustices. Mm-hmm. There are people who have been outraged. There's a spouse that has been had a tremendous
defrauded,
injustice committed. And there are children who have had an injustice oftentimes committed against themselves. So anyway, so that's actually incompatible with somebody being a truly virtuous leader.
Okay.
So, but of course, there are two, so we got 21 minutes left. There are two virtues he kind of hones in on.
Right. So he mentions with Pieper, he mentions the four cardinal virtues. In fact, he defines cardinal virtues as gives that one whole category. But then he emphasizes two virtues in particular, and he quotes several sources for it. And those two virtues are magnanimity and humility. It's an interesting that those would be the two virtues focused on.
Well, so he told me, by the way, in the email that he got that from Havard or Havard or Havar.
Yeah, he quotes that in the article.
So you've got a coordination of two seemingly incompatible virtues. And by the way, he's obviously read in Gergely Lagrange, but remember, Gergely Lagrange says in that massive two-volume tome that we read years ago that the simultaneous possession of seemingly incompatible virtues is one of the certain marks of sanctity.
Mm-hmm.
So the pair that he often uses is meekness and fortitude.
Okay.
You know, we tend to think of the courageous man as being somebody who's not quite associated with meekness, right?
We've got He just blasts through obstacles.
Yes, we've got a picture of a meek man. We've got a picture of a man of fortitude, and they don't seem compatible. Well, prudentia, which is sort of, I call it the traffic cop of the virtues, is there to
prudence, one of the cardinal virtues, one of the hinge virtues,
the
queen of them.
The first cardinal virtue, yeah. So prudence tells us even which other virtue we have to practice at that point. And St. Thomas says, without prudence, none of the other virtues are possible. So to be virtuous at all, you have to be prudent. So prudence will say, well, now you have to practice fortitude. Okay, well, now you've done the fortitude, now you practice the meekness, you know. And that the person who can shift, who can, know when which virtue is called for and practice it peacefully, you know, that person is possessed of true virtue. And if it's supernatural virtue, that's where Gergely Lagrange says this is a sure mark of sanctity.
Okay.
So he, in the business thing, is picking magnanimity and humility. Now, magnanimity is actually related to fortitude. So it's kind of funny that he's got both of those. So if you go by St. Thomas's schematization of the moral virtues.
Which virtues fall under which of the cardinal virtues?
Exactly. So he talks about certain virtues being parts of another virtue. The cardinal virtues are called cardinal because they are hinge virtues, cardo cardinis being the Latin word for hinge. All the other virtues hang on them like a door hangs on hinges. And one of the parts of fortitude is magnanimity.
And just that, as far as the unity of the virtues, that's something else that Father Scari brings up later on. He reminds us that there's all these virtues to be practiced, but they all grow together. And they're all, in a sense, different aspects of the whole. And yeah. we distinguish them, but it's not as if you could just have one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about this at our upcoming conference, the actual unity of the virtues and the way that they sort of fit together, according to St. Thomas. But St. Thomas does speak of them as the fingers and the hand. Like, you know, you don't have a faith like that's an index finger that's 5 feet long and a hope that's this little nub that's, you know, half an inch. There's a certain proportionality in the growth of the virtues. Mm. These perfections, after all, they're found in the same soul. Right. So they're perfections of that same soul. They're going to grow, they're going to diminish in proportion.
Okay.
Although certainly certain saints are known to have greater examples of one or another virtue.
Right. But so why would magnanimity and humility be good virtues for the leader?
So what's magna nimis? Right. Mm-hmm. So great. Right.
Yeah. They call it great souledness.
Yeah. So magnanimity is being great of soul.
High minded.
High mindedness. The the magnanimous man aspires to do great things. The magnanimous man aspires to do things worthy of honor, St. Thomas said. And in fact, St. Thomas has a whole question, should we do things that are worthy of honor? Because, and of course, one of the first objections is going to be, this is significant given the other virtue that Father Oscari thinks is important here, it's not humble to want to do things worthy of honor. Because right. You're just looking for the honor, you're looking for the adulation, the praise, the attaboy.
Which, to answer that very point, Father Oscari quotes Gary Gulagrange, vanity loves the honor and prestige that comes from great things, whereas magnanimity loves the work and effort that has to be done to achieve them. It's a difference of focus.
Yeah. So St. Thomas says that it is good to do works, to do deeds that are worthy of honor. That is in itself good. That's bonum in se. It's a good in itself. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're doing
it... And everyone agrees that a leader should have a broad vision, should be able to see far, have this... an inspiring, compelling, and credible vision.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at historical examples of saints, you can say this is a perfect example of magnanimity. Frequently, it's a pope. Frequently, it's a monarch.
A religious founder.
Frequently, it's a religious founder. People who have to put up with all of the grave difficulties, huge obstacles, but they frequently accomplish great things, you know, and you know,
St. Vincent de Paul,
massive undertakings. Yeah, that's the concept of magnanimity, is that they're engaged in massive undertakings, of things that are very honorable, the kind of thing that does get somebody fame and honor and adulation and so forth. And of course, that's the danger that always is attendant upon this kind of thing. Now, in the days of the mass media and so forth, you have the danger of the celebrity priest. So, right, so that historically we've had, in recent history, sadly, we've had the scandal of several EWTN celebrity priests sort of, precisely falling from grace, you know, getting married, abandoning their vocations, all these horrible things, because obviously they were in it for the fame and glory and stuff. And
at some point, at least their shift changed, even if they started
and
off.
They probably felt empty inside because they weren't going for the real thing. They weren't going for the true magnanimity. They were going through for the thrill that they got out of it, you know. And this is the kind of thing that's warned against in the soul of the apostolate and other